From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last week when Rochester City School District Superintendent Terry Dade announced part of a long-term plan to address the district's fiscal crisis. That plan would move 500 students who are currently educated by community-based organizations. You'll hear the term CBOs this hour, community-based organizations, to pre-K programs in the district. Dade said the move would boost enrollment in the district over the long run, acknowledging that enrollment has been falling by the thousands over the last decade, with some of those students heading to charter schools. But advocates for and leaders with some of the local community-based organizations, our CBOs, have been pushing back in recent days. Currently, the district partners with more than 30 daycare centers and community-based organizations to offer pre-K programs to students. Those students represent about 60% of the district's pre-K students. They say the district's proposal would remove options for parents who rely on wraparound care in centers that are close to their homes. They also say the quality of education could suffer, at least in the short term. According to the Democrat and Chronicle, Mayor Lovely Warren is also weighing in on this issue. She said it would be, quote, an absolute travesty, unquote, to upend the program and imploring the district to turn its attention elsewhere. But the district says CBOs, their supporters, and some in the media have spread misinformation, and Superintendent Dade has asked for an opportunity to clarify parts of the proposal. The school board will vote on it on the 27th of this month, and Superintendent Dade is back with us on Connections talking about this and really answering community questions, because I know you know the community has a lot of questions, and we're grateful for your time. Thank you for being back here.
Thank you for having me on.
Okay, so let's just start with what CBOs are, their current function, and then we're going to talk about what you're proposing. But for people who aren't usually hearing the term CBOs, how do you define them?
So community-based organizations serve a myriad of purposes, of which early childhood education is one of those functions. So the way funding works is we receive funding from the state, and then we allocate funding to CBOs and the Rochester City School District to educate our 3- and 4-year-old students in EPK and UPK, early childhood education, and universal preschool. So right now there's an imbalance. CBOs have stepped in where we did not have seats before to provide those services. So we provide the funding to those CBOs for those seats, and then we secure some of that funding for ourselves.
Okay. And when it comes to what some of the CBOs are these names of organizations that listeners would recognize in some cases?
Yes, like Ibero, YMCA, ABC,
sure.
Baden Street, very well-known, prominent organizations within the community.
Okay, and so what are you proposing be done now?
Right now, the ratio of students being serviced for early childhood education by CBOs is 61%. To 39% in the Rochester City School District. By way of comparison, in Buffalo, Buffalo schools service 81% of their early childhood students, while 19 go to CBOs in Buffalo. Syracuse, 60% attend school in Syracuse Public Schools, while 40% at CBOs. So all I'm doing is trying to bring it into a better balance. The data shows that if students start out with us in the Rochester City School District, they're twice as likely to continue on with us in kindergarten and beyond. We've lost over 6,300 students in the past decade. If we were to sit back and allow this to happen moving forward, we'd be under 19,000 students in the next decade. So one of the two strategies that I know of to reverse that trend is to secure more early childhood seats, and two is to diversify our portfolio of schools in the district. Unfortunately, with a $55 million to $60 million deficit next year, I don't have that luxury. So rather than closing two schools, turning them over to charters, which is part of our concern, repurposing those schools to bring more of our students into the city school district with a return on investment in the long term to reverse our negative trend in enrollment.
All right. Make sure before I move on that I hope the listeners are understanding correctly here as we understand CBOs. So Syracuse, Buffalo, a much smaller percentage of the students there in that age range go to CBOs.
That's correct.
As opposed to the district. So the majority, and in Buffalo, the vast majority of students at that age, which is what? I mean, we're talking what age here?
3- and 4-year-old.
Three and four are going to the district. Here, the majority are going to CBOs.
That's
correct. You'd like to flip that.
That's correct.
And one of the main reasons is the research shows that if students go to CBOs, they are less likely to To do what?
To stay on with us in the Rochester City.
To stay on and graduate. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that... I would be very surprised if you intentionally are denigrating the work of the CBOs. Is that just acknowledging reality? I mean, why is it that if a student goes to a CBO, they're less likely to succeed?
It's absolutely not denigrating our CBOs. They do an exceptional job, but it's reality. I looked at the data for every single CBO and asked the question, what percentage of the students who were in a CBO enrolled in our kindergarten in the RCSD? Comparatively looked at our existing pre-K classes in our schools in our one early childhood center, and what percentage of those students actually enrolled with us in kindergarten. And it's a double likelihood if you start out in RCSD that you'll continue on at the K level.
Why though? Why do you think that is?
I think there's numerous points. One is if you actually are in a school and can look at the kindergarten teachers in first grade and sixth grade and see what you is to come, you have much more faith in the schooling that your child is receiving versus an unknown of if you're starting off with an organization in your neighborhood, but not quite sure what your K experience might look like, your options are going to be much more open at that point.
So when we talk about this particular change, is this a cost-saving move?
It is. So
okay.
The easy... position that I could take would be simply closing school 44 and 57. Just closing those two schools and sending those students to under-enrolled schools nearby is a savings of over $4 million right away. Rather than shuttering those buildings and turning them over to a potential charter organization would do nothing but contribute to our decline in enrollment, because the vast majority of the students that we've lost over the past decade have gone to charter organizations. I tried to think innovatively of how can we turn this challenge into an opportunity. So by opening a pre-K center, one in each zone would open opportunities for parents, and it can also change the trajectory that we're on for losing funding each and every year due to a decline in enrollment.
So what you're proposing, at least the framework that I'm hearing from you, is offered as sort of a win-win. In other words, if students don't go to CBO at 3 and 4 and they go to the district, they're more likely to stay with the district, to stay through. They have better outcomes. And it happens to save money.
That's correct.
What do you perceive as misinformation being spread then?
So one, the pre-K experience in Rochester is nationally known. I knew about Rochester early childhood before I even considered the superintendency here. Some misinformation is that the quality of our pre-K experience is not dependent on the ratio that exists between CBO and Rochester City School District. The 61 to 39% is not where the magic is happening. There are fantastic things going on in community-based organizations education along with RCSD. So when I read things like bad for students, I'm not sure that that's necessarily true, because when we look at the metrics that we utilize to evaluate quality, RCSD pre-K actually outperforms most CBOs in all the metrics. So it's not bad for kids. I think it's been something that's been in place for a long time, and we're just trying to get the ratio closer to the educational institution actually providing the educational services for our 3 and 4 year old students.
Why do you think there's community pushback then?
For a very valid reason. So one, community-based organizations are right there in the community. A lot of families are looking right next door or within close proximity to say, yes, I think this is a great location for me, either for work or for my home situation. They may have other opportunities like some CBOs provide early childhood education from 18 months to 1 year old that we wouldn't be able to provide in Rochester City school district. So I think those are very valid points. What I think is concerning is that we are also going to be providing things like extended care. So providing opportunities for students until 6 o'clock, knowing that that's what our parents need. And also looking at the quality of high qualified certified teachers providing the education for these classrooms.
But Mr. Superintendent, when it comes to money, if CBOs are already doing this work, and you're going to shift the work to the district, is it logical for me to, at least not having pushed pencils myself on this, think, boy, this sounds like it could cost more, because do you have to hire more staff, pay for building costs for these 500 students? Are there additional expenses I don't know? But how are you saving money with that?
So one is the funding hasn't changed. We've actually increased funding from the state for early childhood education. So approximately $9,000 per student is what we allocate between the student, between the district and CBO. So that money would follow the students. So we would have ample funding to hire teachers, do some changes to our building renovations and the like to make sure that they are retrofitted for these classrooms. And then I can't underemphasize the long-range importance of changing the trajectory that we're on with regards to declining enrollment. To have a strategy that's going to bring more of our babies into the RCSD and keep them in the long term rather than the dramatic decline is something that you can't put a price tag on.
How many CBOs are going to be affected, and how will it be determined which CBOs those are?
We still haven't come up with the formula for how many CBOs are going to be impacted. We are going to be looking at criteria like health and safety violations, whether they've been able to fill all their seats, the quality of educational outcomes for the CBOs. I also want the listeners to know that there were some CBOs that we're already looking at potentially moving on within the next year and not providing early childhood education, some that weren't able to fill the seats that we allocated for them. So it's really a variety of criteria that's going to be utilized. It's not going to be going after we need 12 CBOs to shut down to equal the seats. We're really going to be looking holistically at what CBOs are providing, what can we not provide with our RCSD centers, and come up with a path forward that we think will work for everyone.
I know you've seen some of the coverage elsewhere, and we've tried to sort of keep up with what the concerns being voiced by CBOs, because we don't have anyone representing CBOs in the program today. But here's Ida Perez from Ibero talking to WROC-TV, our colleagues over there, and here's some of what she said. She said, quote, "I think some of the community has been misled. Without that funding for this kind of work, we won't be able to provide for parents today. We've already have some parents saying they won't be able to work now. They'll have to stay home," end quote. And Perez adds, there are around 27 community-based organizations, CBOs, caring for kids. This could mean about six of them would close completely. She says that impact would be rippling outward and affecting a large number of children and families. What do you say to that?
So what I want to make sure that everyone understands is that parents' choice will not go away. I think the choice environment in Rochester needs to be elevated as part of this conversation. So by having a pre-K center, one in each of our zones, while still having CBOs across the city being able to provide services for families, still gives that parent an opportunity to figure out, what do I need for my child to succeed and be successful? So that's not going away. So this kind of narrative of by going after some seats and bringing them back to the district is going to eliminate parent choice is just inaccurate. There's still going to be ample choice for families to make appropriate decisions. This does not force them into these educational centers that we're opening. They'll still be able to choose what's best for their families.
Do you agree that we could see half a dozen CBOs closed because of this?
I'm not able to make that determination at this point.
Okay, fair enough. Listeners, if you want to communicate with the superintendent of Rochester City Schools, he's generous with his time with us today. Terry Dade is here, and it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. Have you been in touch with CBOs? Do you feel like that communication has been clear and upfront?
So it's been about a week and a half, I believe, since I put this proposal forward. And the Board of Education needed to be informed first that this was going to be a proposal that I needed them to vote on at the end of this month. I was able to meet with a broad cross-section of organizations, from funders who look at child care and early educational outcomes for students. Heads of CBOs were a part of that meeting, in addition to the Children's Agenda, the Children's Institute, and other very interested partners. to have a dialogue like we're having today of just getting questions answered and perspective to the fore. And then I'm hoping to set up one more opportunity to meet with heads of CBOs to continue that dialogue of how can we all be successful moving forward.
Sure. And so given what you have stepped into, looking at a long-term fiscal plan that is frankly in a crisis, knowing that you've got to make some decisions in the short run, I mean, I think we all understand that. I also understand if CBOs are saying, this is moving pretty quickly here, and this is going to impact us pretty quickly. Can you slow down? Can we draw this out? If we're going to make some of these shifts, can we do it in a year from now? Can we shift it forward here? What do you say about that?
So the February 27th date is intentional. And unfortunately, if I had not walked into a $65 million mess when I arrived, we would have had much more opportunity to engage as a community to address our 2021 budget. Unfortunately, as this community well knows, we were dealing with last year all the way up until the end of last calendar year. Mm-hmm. All the way until the winter break, we were dealing with mid-year layoffs and reductions to address our existing deficit. As soon as we came back, I had to pivot and start to look at the 2021 budget year. So the February 27th date that the board is voting on is intentional because the state needs to know what we're doing with our buildings if we're going to reclassify them as early childhood centers by March 1st. So a delay is off the table. It's either we don't move forward with this proposal. School closures has been a part of this community conversation all the way back to Superintendent Vargas, who said we should be closing one building per year, and I believe he said that 5 years
given ago. Enrollment trends?
Given enrollment trends, that we can't have the district footprint look exactly the same with thousands of less students. What I'm trying to do here is, if we were to continue this conversation, there would be vacant buildings in the RCSD sitting there boarded up with no decision being made, potential for them being taken over by other organizations while we're sitting here trying to make up our mind about what to do to move forward. So this is the proposal that I believe is an immediate cost savings, but then it's also going to have a long-term impact on the city.
So is it unfair to say that this has been rushed?
It is unfair to say it's been rushed. And I believe all of these tough decisions, like mid-year layoffs, the request was to delay. And unfortunately, given $125 million deficit over 2 years is unheard of for a district our size to try to recoup funds. I believe experts are going to come into the conversation by way of monitor from the state. And I'm going to put my money where my mouth is and say that they're going to back up these proposals and say that we probably should have done them years ago.
What do you make of Mayor Lovely Warren's comments saying that this particular park could be an absolute travesty?
I'm going to continue to work with Mayor Warren. We've been able to work through some really challenging times with our mid-year layoffs. Her budget team is working side by side with mine as we move forward. The mayor knows the impact that our CBOs and the assets that our CBOs bring to families. So I think she's speaking for that impact that she knows that they have on the city, the residents of this great, great city. At the same time, I think she would also understand that status quo is not where we are for the Rochester City School District. We have to come up with a long-term fiscal plan, and I can guarantee that changing the district footprint is going to be a part of whatever expert comes in, including the comptroller team themselves are going to say we have to do things very differently and start closing buildings, but also look at how can we reverse trends in enrollment.
But when the mayor comes out with a statement like that, I mean, you're right. She wants some serious disruption. She is not satisfied with what she's seen, the management of this district for years now. You come in, you're saying we have to make significant changes structurally for the long term. I think the two of you do not disagree on that. She's mm-hmm. maybe disagreeing with some of the specifics and the details. But when she says that, do you call her and say, look, that's not helpful. Can we talk about this? Or do you think that you're just not going to be on the same page, that you and the mayor are probably not going to find alignment on some of this?
So the way I operate is I like to reach out to just say if there's any opportunity that you would like to answer questions
sure.
and the like, I'm absolutely open to that. What I don't do is you'll never hear me come out to say she's wrong or the like. I try to see things from where she stands. At the same time, still do my job of putting the facts on the table for the community at large because we didn't get to 55 to 60 million $1 deficit overnight, adding to $65 million from last school year. So I know that things have to look differently. I thought I would be doing less of the doom and gloom in my first year as superintendent, but unfortunately that's the hand that I was dealt, and we just have to make the tough decisions to get us on the right footing.
So we've talked about shifting kids from CBOs to the district under this proposal, but it sounds like there could be an expansion of after school programming as well. How does that get paid for?
So looking at our grant funding, if listeners were paying attention, we had a much larger number anticipated for layoffs at mid-year. When I presented to the community on November 12th, it was approximately 287 positions would be impacted. That number got dropped all the way down to approximately 151 positions, including over 40 teachers being brought back off the cut list. That was through collaboration with the state of New York and looking at our grant fund usage and how we can use that more strategically. Same thing here. If we see a need that parents are asking for and aftercare is something that they're begging for at the 3 and 4 year old age, how are we going to utilize our grant funding to secure that need?
But are we talking Title I? Are we talking about something else?
Title I could be a driver, but there's also other grant funding that we can utilize to meet this need.
The reason I ask is my assumption, again, not an expert, mid-year is that money is already earmarked elsewhere. Is it not? Is Title I at least earmarked?
So we would be looking at our 2021 grant usage. So those funds are going to be loaded for July 1. So we would look at that pot of money to see how we're going to allocate to schools, with our centers being inclusive of those. That funding allocation.
Before I take some listener feedback, update us on what we talked about last time. You went to New York State looking for $35 million from the state. That's the number?
That's correct.
And last week we heard from retiring Assemblyman David Gant, among others, saying, we could do 25 and you want the rest. We want you to agree to a monitor. We want conditions and strings attached. Is that reasonable?
Absolutely. So fiscal monitor, fiscal strings attached. There's no way you can provide someone with a $35 million bailout and not expect some strings attached, especially when there's been some missteps along the way. So I think Assemblymember Gant's expectation for fiscal strings attached is completely appropriate.
Okay. Joe in Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, arguably over the last 10 years, we have the best prepared kids going into kindergarten in the nation. The CBOs and the district, it's one of the areas where the district does a good job, do a first-rate job to dismantle, and you can say that this wouldn't impact the CBOs, it absolutely would, to dismantle one of the few functioning programs doesn't make sense. The other thing is, if you don't shut these buildings, right now, you, Superintendent Fade, and I'm sorry for what you walked into, don't have that much power to impact the district. You have these contracts, you have state laws. From what I've read in the paper, Adam has refused to negotiate with you to try and mitigate the staff layoffs. Wouldn't it give you more power to shut these four buildings, and perhaps as the last two that were shut became charter schools, have a larger charter school presence, which then you could go to Adam and say, look, Dr. Urbanski, either we make some sense here, or there will be less district, less unionized teachers. Aren't you taking your own negotiating power away by keeping these buildings open while also hurting the CBOs?
Joe, before I'm going to let him answer all of those, because you've layered some important questions there, and I'm glad you called. But to be fair here, and it's nice to hear from you, this is Joe Klein from Klein Steel and the patron saint of charter schools in Rochester. So, I mean, you have an interest in seeing more students go to charters, don't you, Joe?
Well, having spent 3 years helping lead the Mayor's Literacy Commission in the district for 3 years in looking at charter schools, I have an interest as far as education is better, but my real interest is improving the district so that all of our kids can learn. I'm not a charter school guy because I love charter schools. I'm a charter school guy because after my 3 years in the district, I saw stuff I didn't like, decided to be superintendent, went off to Harvard to get a master's degree where my professors said it's the only unfixable district in the country. So it's not that I'm a charter school guy. I'm a guy who wants to see our kids read, write, learn math, chemistry, physics, and thrive. And I see that better right now at the charter schools, not all of whom are perfect, and none of them are perfect, but they're certainly performing better. But the district, I mean, you look at the Stanford data from 2017, worst academic growth, third through eighth in the nation of the largest 200 districts. We're obviously doing something wrong, especially since we spend over double the national average per student.
All right, well,
but I'm pro-district, I'm pro-charter, I'm pro-kids.
Joe, as always, good to hear from you. Thanks for taking the time, and I'll let Terry respond. And I do think, Terry, I mean, gotten to know Joe over the years, I think he thinks kids are in better situations when they end up in charters, and that's one of the reasons he's calling saying, do this a different way. It's a good thing that over the last decade we've seen thousands of kids move into charters. He wants more. Do you want more kids in charters?
Absolutely not. So I was brought here for one job, and that was to make sure that we are providing the best education possible for the students and families who choose Rochester City School District. So on the point of dismantling the pre-K success that we've had is inaccurate by a long shot. Again, I talked about the 61% being serviced in CBOs versus 39% in Rochester City School District. My proposal brings that to 55% serviced by Rochester City School District and still 45% serviced by CBOs. So I would state that the magic of the pre-K success in Rochester City School District is not dependent on the over-reliance of CBOs. Which is what I think we've had to do. CBOs stepped in when we did not have the seats, and they did everything for our community that was right. So this is not an attack on CBOs. This is opening more and more seats for pre-K students. If you look at DC public schools and other school systems across the nation that have seen an increase in enrollment, DC public schools have seen a steady increase in enrollment over the past 10 years, every single year. And they have a healthy charter environment. They are like me, where I'm very competitive, that I know families are going to make the choices that are right for their students, and my job is to make sure that the choice is the Rochester City School District. The second point about utilizing this as a negotiation chip is not my style. I need to do what's right for the city school district, and I think that that is getting more and more students in our pre-K seats and keeping them for the long term so that they're not going charter because they're choosing charter in the absence of high-quality education choices.
He says that Adam Urbanski, the head of the Rochester Teachers Association, he's been told has refused to negotiate with you and work with you. Do you agree with that?
I don't agree with that. I think that emotions were extremely high at the end of December going into the beginning of January. And Dr. Urbanski was doing what he was supposed to do as the leader of the Rochester Teacher Association. At this point, we're back to negotiating for a teacher contract. So everything that's out there about we're refusing to cooperate with one another is just inaccurate. We all have the best interest of our students in mind, and that's the way we're going to continue to operate under my leadership.
I mean, it would be unusual if Rochester didn't have a union leader who isn't battling somewhat with administration. This happens in cities across the country.
That's right.
Do you view this as unique in any sense? Do you view Dr. Urbanski's work as being overly focused on the teachers he's serving but not the students?
So what I think was incredibly unique about what we just experienced was mid-year layoffs. Mm-hmm. You can see something of this magnitude all the way out to L.A., but even there, they were talking about at the end of the year, how do you balance the next year's budget with staff reductions? What we lived through to cut $30 million in our existing budget with mid-year layoffs was something that none of us could have asked for. And it's going to be tough for anyone to navigate, particularly union leadership and administration and the Board of Education. So that was extremely unique. I think as we head into this $55 to $60 million dollar problem that we have, you'll see a much smoother conversation happening because we have time on our side and a better understanding of kind of where we are for the 2021 school year.
All right, listeners, we're taking more of your feedback and questions. The superintendent of Rochester City Schools is here because he wants to, and in his words, dispel misinformation in our community and make sure he understands there's going to be debate about long-term planning. But he wants to make sure that everyone is on the same page with accurate information, and that's one of the reasons he's here. Terry Dade, the superintendent of Rochester City Schools, we'll get back to your feedback for him after our only break of the hour. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on The Next Connections. A conversation about the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment. What is it? Well, after a nearly century-long fight, the proposed amendment, which would guarantee equal rights for all Americans regardless of sex, has the 38 states needed for approval. But is it too late? We discuss it. In our second hour, a conversation about how to positively motivate children to pursue their hobbies and passions. We'll discuss a book called Kids Aren't Lazy. All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Just a brief reminder that we are in day one of our winter membership campaign. And this hour, a member since 1973, a generous guy from Fairport, has been a member since the beginning, really, and a volunteer for us, is matching any contributions you make to public radio. So I've been talking about the number to call and talk to the superintendent, but for a moment, let me tell you how to talk to our volunteers, who would love to talk to you for 90 seconds if you want to support public radio. It's 454-6300. Or you can jump online at WXXINews.org. We don't do this a lot. We try not to interrupt programming. We do it less than most. And the only reason that we're strong is because we have a community that chooses it and that trusts us to bring in leaders like Terry Dade and many others to have sensitive and tough and direct conversations that are substantive and lengthy. We're not talking 90 seconds. I bet the superintendent is sort of driven nuts by watching local news. I've been a part of it for years, and I love you all in local news, but you have limits. It's tough. 90 seconds to explain a budget? That is not easy. Well, we got almost 90 minutes, so it's a different situation. 454-6300 to support it. Please do. WXXINews.org. Thank you very much for supporting public radio. Back to your feedback here, and let me bring in Eamon is next, I think, from the Children's Agenda. Hi, Eamon.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah. So first, I just want to say that, you know, the superintendent definitely has been given a lot of tough challenges to overcome. And, you know, at the Children's Agenda, we're very sympathetic to that. And I actually think that this proposal is very forward-thinking in terms of how do we deal with declining enrollment, you know, as a community to the city school district. What are ways that we can be creative around building usage? And much of really what the superintendent is saying is right in terms of the goals and where we should be going. The concerns that we've had and we've expressed to him and to his staff are about the impact this will have on the program, at least in the short term, because right now opening up 500 seats is just a big undertaking no matter what you were doing, whether it be that could be an entire school you're opening essentially, right? And in this, it's in two schools. You're opening a lot of program. You have to hire a lot of teachers to oversee those programs. You know, what their level of experience coming in will be a question. How long will it take to get those up to full speed and to be running well? Because, like the superintendent said, there isn't necessarily a difference between a CBO-run pre-K and a district-run pre-K, but any type of major disruption to a school program, it's likely to see a dip in quality. And so that is concerning, knowing that if 28 classrooms will be closed in CBOs, some of those are going to be quality classrooms. There are many good ones. Like the superintendent said, there are some that probably need to be closed anyway. But at this level of scale, we can't pretend there won't be some disruption. And at the same time, the issue of wraparound care, the issue of transportation, which is not provided for pre-K, those can be real roadblocks for parents. And so if we centralize pre-K slots into schools, then definitely that's going to impact some parents in terms of how are they going to be able to transport their kids if they do not live in that neighborhood, given the number of slots and the locations. And then, of course, the wraparound care.
So, Amy, let me just jump in. Can you hang there for 1 second,
yeah,
Amy?
Yeah, no, it's a lot.
All right, so because I want to work one by one. Transportation is something that came up in a separate email from a parent saying, number one, doesn't this mean for those 500 families longer commute times to get kids where they need to go, those 3- and 4-year-olds? Yes or no, Superintendent?
So not necessarily. I think we all do not know what the intended plan is with regards to what seats will be impacted. The criteria that we'll be utilizing, we'll be looking at availability of seats, proximity, and the like. One-third of CBOs actually provide transportation. So we aren't seeing a crumbling of CBOs with regards to two-thirds not providing transportation. We'll still be providing bus passes for parents for getting their students to school. And then lastly, choice is still going to prevail in Rochester City School District. This shift of 500 seats still allows parents with ample choice in every single zone to make the choice that is right for their family. So to say that every parent is not going to be able to have transportation and longer commutes is not fair, because we still don't know where those CBOs are going to be located and the like moving forward.
All right. Eamon, does that address it?
Well, I understand the point the superintendent is making. It's just at this scale, it's hard to believe that. And I would defer, you know, they have the better data on this. And I think that's really one of the reasons that we as an organization have been asking for more time. I know the superintendent has laid out the reasons why this needs to happen quickly. But a lot of these questions can't be answered in a timely enough manner to know. And I think it's reasonable to think there would be some impact on transportation. You know, School 44, for instance, is on the far southwest side of the city. So the idea that some parents wouldn't have to travel farther to get there, I think that has to be the case, especially given that there are, you know, existing schools that offer pre-K within that neighborhood. There's definitely going to be some parents that are going to be impacted by the issue of not having transportation. A lot of kids walk to the nearest preschool because there is no transportation offered at district schools or at some CBOs, like the superintendent pointed out. So I think it's fair to say there will be an impact on parents.
Okay, so not all, but some. Is that a fair assumption, Superintendent?
Yeah, some definitely. Some, I mean, absolutely, as we look across the landscape of the city. I also want to make sure that everyone's aware that parents are choosing longer commutes each and every day in our school system. So school choice and what our managed choice policy has to be a broader community conversation. So to minimize this to a pre-K conversation, I think, is a little bit unfair when we have a larger district problem of how long our parents are traveling or sending their students on buses to get the school of their choice. The other piece I want to be clear with is the timing of the conversations that we're having now is far in excess of where we're having school closure conversations and the ramifications in RCSD past. Opening this door in January so that we're engaging this conversation, February 27th is the vote, but we have the whole remainder of the year to work through transportation concerns, aftercare, and the like. So we're doing this in a manner that's really going to engage our community in a long-term process rather than putting off the vote until May, where we're going to be behind the eight ball to get some very important things in place by the start of the 2021 school year.
All right, Eamon, I know you work through a lot. What else do you want to make sure you hear the superintendent address? Go ahead.
Well, to the extent that he can, I don't expect there to be a lot of ready-made answers for every single question. I think just as an organization, we do believe there needs to be more time to think through all these. So even if there are proposals and pieces put forth, just the time to digest and understand all the consequences and implications of that are very difficult on this timeline. And it will have a big impact. There's just a lot of uncertainty about where this goes. And so one other thing, just last thing, is when we talk about after-school care and the wraparound, even if that were grant-funded, you know, could that grant have been used for some type of other enrichment program in another school? You know, the there is some opportunity cost that's probably there that comes with that, and aftercare is quite expensive, so it would be a significant amount of money. So if this does not necessarily save money through any other mechanism than the closing of schools, then what is the urgency behind it? That is that's hard. There are decisions that have to be made because of money, and very tough, and frankly, they're going to be harmful, but they just have to be made. This doesn't appear to be one of them. This seems to be about building utilization. And if it's about building utilization, can we be more creative? Can we find other ways to use those buildings? Could there be an agreement with the city to not have those convert to charter schools and have a year holding pattern to figure something out? Just thinking about other ways, because ultimately, I think the superintendent has a lot of great plans here and wants to do what's best for the community. We just want to have a process that really gets to understand where everybody is coming from and that parents are comfortable, that the community is comfortable with this direction.
All right, so before I let you go then, to understand the point on grants, it sounds to me like what you're saying is in order to make some of this, especially the after-school programming, work, there's potentially a lot of money that would need, and even if he moves it from somewhere, it could potentially mean it's a zero-sum game, other programming is lost. Is that what you're concerned about, Eamon?
Yeah, that's my concern. And again, these are issues that would need to be really thought through and have time to digest. And this is just not a lot of time to think this through.
As always, Eamon, thank you for calling the program. We appreciate it. Superintendent Dade, go ahead.
So something that I've seen Eamon and the Children's Agenda do well is advocate for needs of the district. Every need that they've advocated for, so like bilingual educators. If you invest in anything, you're going to be shifting funds in your budget to make that happen. So what I've been a strong proponent of is aligning resources with priorities. This would be one of my top priorities is to, one, replicate high-quality preschool education in the city school district, while at the same time starting to address some of our long-term structural issues that we have in the district. So to say that it's going to cost money and be a shift, of course. Everything that we're doing next year, we have a $55 million to $60 million shift coming in our next year budget. So everything has to be prioritized. Early childhood education, particularly from pre-K to 2, is something that I'm going to hit heavy and hard, so it impact reading and math achievement long-term in the district. So I think that this is a win-win situation of not just shuttering buildings and turning them over to other organizations, but also doubling down on what's working in Rochester City School District.
Valerie writes to say, the cuts furthest from the classroom are central office. Any cuts there?
There will be. There will be cuts at central office. There'll be cuts all across the board. You can't hit a $55 to $60 million budget without everything being back on the table.
And I will say, Valerie, I mean, if this sounds like I'm sort of carrying water for the superintendent, I don't think it is. Those of us who've spent a lot of time covering and trying to understand the numbers do know you can argue about sort of bulk or sort of glut in administrative office. That's sort of a subjective sort of conversation, but there is not enough money there. You couldn't fix the hole just by going to central office.
That's correct.
I mean, that is a fact.
We could literally have nobody in central office, and we'd still be facing around a $25 million deficit.
Okay, and I'm not saying the question's not valid, Valerie. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure. And she may say, I understand that, but are you cutting some? And the answer
right.
is...
Absolutely.
Okay, fair enough. This is from Catherine says, more of a question on the function and the quality of CBO. She says, CBOs voluntarily provide more staff in their classrooms to balance teacher-to-student ratios, offering more personal attention than is possible in a centralized facility. As a parent and as an educator over 30 years, I've witnessed the benefits of this firsthand. My son's daycare teachers prepared him excellently for his pre-K program and encouraged his joy in learning, self-regulation, and resilience, essential aspects of kindergarten readiness. It sounds like she's saying CBOs don't just do a good job. They actually have a better staff-to-student ratio. What do you say to that, Superintendent?
So some may have a better staff-to-student ratio. I would be also able to line up parents who are very happy with their pre-K experience within our schools, line up parents who are exceptionally happy with their experience at Rochester Early Childhood Education Center that is doing an exceptional job in only their fourth year of existence, bursting at the seams. They're begging me to move them to a larger building because they can take many more families. So yes, CBOs are doing an exceptional job. And I would have data to show that our pre-K experience in within Rochester City School District is on par or even better suited.
And listeners, if you missed it earlier this hour, the superintendent is pointing to data that indicates, not to disparage CBOs, but what you want essentially is more students in the 3 to 4 year age range educated within the district, not that work being sort of shifted out to CBOs. The majority right now in Rochester at that age range is given to CBOs. In Buffalo, in Syracuse, it's not. It's district first, then CBOs, and he's trying to get that shift there. Fair enough?
That's correct.
Okay. $55 to $60 million trying to deal with. For those who missed it last week, what's the bulk? Where's the bulk of that money going to come from in terms of making that cut?
So if you study anything in education, we're personnel-driven. The vast majority of our budget is personnel, so we really have to start looking at our staffing reductions and what that impact is going to be on our students.
Do we know how many teachers you expect to cut to make this work long-term, to get a permanent solution?
Not at this time.
Okay. Don't have a range yet?
No.
When do you expect to have that?
I'll be presenting my budget next month, so there's not much time between now and when my budget will be put before the Board of Education.
Okay. But it's fair that the community ought to be prepared to hear some kind of a number going
forward. That's right.
Okay. And that's not, again, this time the number would not be a mid-year number. That's going to be looking forward, hopefully with time to plan.
And that's right.
Ideally with the community trying to understand that. One voice you've heard a lot from, and I'm going to take his call now, someone who's concerned not just about teachers, but about teachers of color. Howard Eagle's on the line with us. Go ahead, Howard.
Absolutely. I mean, I got to say, this is becoming, how you doing, Superintendent Dade?
How are you, Mr. Eagle?
I'm good. There's a pattern where people like Eamon calls in, and I know he represents an important organization, and he has lots of time. Every time I call your show, I'm always rushed. But anyways, the question I have goes back to Joe Klein's question about negotiations with Dr. Urbanski. And whether or not those have broken down. The superintendent mentioned that during the mid-year layoffs, tempers were flaring and so forth. Urbanski was doing his job, and he believes that everybody has the best interest of our children at heart. Now, you know, in my view, I don't believe that's necessarily so for Dr. Urbanski all the time. But I wanted to ask about an issue that was raised a few weeks ago when Urbanski was on your show, and I called in and I asked him about the LIFO laws, you know, last in, first out, with the layoffs, black teachers who the district has been working hard to recruit and retain, you know, under this whole guise of we want equity, we want diversity. And we know many of them were the first ones to be sent back out the door because of the LIFO laws. Dr. Urbanski said on your show at that time, there's nothing we can do about those laws. Well, I challenge that. We have to do something about those laws. I point out to people that there were once laws that said, in the day, and I had to ride in the back of the bus. If nobody ever challenged those laws, they wouldn't have changed. So my question is related to, as they're running back and forth to Albany, lobbying for money and so forth, don't you believe that this is a good time, or any time really is a good time, to raise the issue about the need to change some of these laws at the state level? Because that's what Urbanski hides behind. He says, oh, you know, this is not just about our seniority. This has to do with state laws. You remember he was on your show.
No, that's a fair point. Yeah.
And that the laws can't be changed. It's been challenged in court before and so forth. So, you know, it really, we can't keep talking about diversity and equity and really valuing it, and then we do nothing that's going to fundamentally change the structure that continues to promote the status quo that is anti-equity, anti-diversity. Racism is what we're talking about. That's the issue at hand that nobody really seems to want to talk about. And I do want to ask Superintendent Dade if that's a priority in his budget.
All right, Howard, let me ask him that question. Thank you for the phone call. He's right, by the way. Bad laws have been part of this country since the beginning. And eventually, if people care enough, they can get rid of them. Is LIFO a bad law?
I think it should be on the table for a change, just based on all of my years of experience in leading schools and seeing what the implication can be. When you're not discussing quality and goals of an institution and a school, over some things that have been in place for decades. So I agree with Mr. Eagle that should be something that we should be having greater conversations about. I've heard it from Mr. Eagle, from other advocates, from the board, from teachers themselves who are going through these mid-year layoffs. So I think that speaks volumes of at least engaging in the conversation and not saying, well, we've already discussed it before, so it can't be changed at this time.
30 seconds. Do you agree with him that LIFO, last in, first out, hurts the district's ability to retain and grow the pool of teachers of color?
I do. You'll see it take place with this year's mid-year layoffs. And then as we look at the $55 to $60 million in reductions, as you put diversity efforts into place, and then they're overturned in the next 2 years with layoffs, I think that begs a serious conversation.
Well, that will be a conversation that we have on this program very soon, and I think that that's an important one. Right now, I know it is the law. Mm-hmm. The question is, will there be advocacy to change it? Again, you're generous with your time. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
The superintendent of Rochester City Schools is Terry Dade, and they're working this month especially on long-term fiscal planning. There will be more community conversation and more conversations right here, and we always appreciate having him, and we're appreciative of Central Office making that happen. Thanks to everyone involved with the program today. Thanks, Bob, for volunteering with us, and Emma Ray Stein is the intern, Rob Braden is the engineer, Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. When we say member-supported public radio, it's weeks like this. Are you a member of public radio? Please become one at 454-6300 and join this family and keep it strong. Thanks very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.